Whoa! Mr. Keebler?
Dude?
And Banjo-Kazooie of Nintendo 64 at your door!
Uh-huh. Hello?
We're looking for a magic puzzle piece.
Like that one?
Exactamundo! That's one fast little dude!
Eddie, wait!
You can help Banjo-Kazooie find the magic puzzle piece or other things by scratching the square on the game piece inside Keebler packages. You could even win a Nintendo 64 Home Entertainment Center! For free game piece, you can write to this address. Many will enter, few will win.
Uh-huh. This week in your parents' basement, we are playing as the Nintendo 64's Best Bear. From 1998, it's Banjo-Kazooie by Rare. I'm Steve Greenwell, and with me is Tootie's best friend, it's Todd Brisket.
Hi there, Tootie. What are you doing today?
And our other regular co-host, he regularly turns into a termite, a bee, a pumpkin, and a walrus with the help of his friends. It's Yule Hauser.
Grunty admits that she's a hog. I really need a big hot dog.
Is that dialogue from the game or from the manual?
That is directly from the game.
There's a lot of dialogue, a surprising amount of dialogue in this game.
It's a very telling dialogue too.
Today we're joined by three special guests. One thought she was contacting our competing show, Your Uncle's Attic, but instead we booked her for Your Parents' Basement, and she quickly became a fan. The other has been asked along for the ride. Welcome to the show, Michelle, Jesse, and Billy. Why don't we go Michelle first?
Hi there. It was actually our parents' basement that we were scheduled to do a podcast with. I was the one who got confused and threw another Y into the mix. Mm. But I listened to a little of your show and, yeah, I enjoyed it a lot. So I was lucky enough to be able to get on here as well.
Yeah, you don't have to share the real reason. You can just make things up. It's okay.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It was totally.
Yeah, you know, we really hate those guys from My Uncle's Attic.
Yes.
What goes on in that attic?
There probably actually is a show called My Uncle's Attic, and at some point they're going to be very confused. Jesse, do you want to introduce yourself a little bit?
Hi, I'm Jesse. I created Gravity Gerbil, and I'm married to Michelle. It's cool.
I did play a little bit of Gravity Gerbil as well this week, so I will talk about that later. And well, Billy,
for the listeners, it's a life changing experience. Oh.
I'm the other half of Reinforcement Productions, Jesse's partner.
Oh, but not his wife. That is Michelle.
No. Let that be clear right off the bat.
Yeah, that's just a silly
union. I have two partners and two other halves. On the show with me right now.
Three heads.
They even know about each other.
Be aware that one of this is a business where the other one is.
Yeah, one exchanges money for services.
Oh my god.
Yeah. And the other one's Billy.
Yes.
Well then.
Although I said at the beginning we weren't gonna work blue tonight, so
this is a family friendly show here.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Smell. You can reach us by email at parentsbasementpodcast@gmail.com and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. If you like the show, be sure to subscribe to it on iTunes and give us some stars. You can also join our Discord channel by going to ypppodcast.com/Discord, where you can chat with all the sweet baby boys. And as always, please support the show by using our Amazon click-through link. You can find it right on the YPB homepage, ypppodcast.com. This week's game is Banjo-Kazooie. Released in 1998, Banjo-Kazooie is Rare's platformer follow-up to Donkey Kong Country. It was originally worked on by the Donkey Kong Country 2 team, and it was initially going to be a different, new hot IP, a game called Dream, for the old SNES. Instead, Rare saw Super Mario 64 and decided to make one of the best platform games of all time. Michelle, you mentioned this game as one of your favorites, and you nominated it for coverage. So why don't you share some of your memories first about this one?
Okay, great. Sure. Banjo-Kazooie is actually quite the milestone in my gaming history because the N64 was the first console that my brother and I owned growing up. We got it for Christmas in 1998. Mm-hmm. Banjo-Kazooie was the second game I played after, of course, Super Mario 64. I just got really immersed in it. I loved all the colorful graphics. I was a big fan of the dynamic changing music, how it would be the same melody, but it would change tone of when you went from area to area. Not to mention, Gruntilda was just a really fun villain for when you're a 12-year-old.
Are you talking about Grunty?
Grunty, yes.
Yes. Gruntilda is the full name.
Yes.
A fun fact, Billy is actually, he was in Boy Scouts with my brother, so we knew each other from that. And I ended up giving him a lot of phone walkthroughs of the game. Because we were playing it.
Billy sucked.
The what? One moment I particularly remember about that was my first meeting with Clanker. And I had assumed the thing was going to eat the characters. And she's like, no, he's friendly.
How old were you at this point?
I was like 7.
You were 10, I was 12.
17?
Oh. Mm.
No, I was 7.
I know.
Yeah. It would have been funnier if you said I was 32.
But... No.
It's going to eat Kazooie.
I was 7 when the game came out.
Okay, that
the NES
you know,
was
that...
my first system, but I graduated to the 64 in 96, and then that began the whole gaming thing for me. Really,
you said
that that makes more sense about why you were calling Michelle on the phone asking for tips if you were 7. So
yeah, I was 7. She had already beaten it, so she was pointing me the right ways.
Mm-hmm. Mentoring you. How?
Yeah.
That's what we like to hear. Huel, did you have any experience with this one? Because I know Todd and I did not have a ton.
This was a solid favorite in the N64 lineup for me. It's just super fun. Like, I don't know what else to say. Like, Mario 64 is there as the milestone, but this takes like everything that game did and just makes it better. Like, I would say, like, better graphics, better controls, like, it's more fun moves. Maybe level design is a little better in Mario 64, but it's still a Rare game, so it's still, like, really well mapped out and all that kind of stuff.
You know, with the Mario 64 comparison, the one thing that always messed me up was I'm falling from a high ledge, and, I just need to time the ground pound. That doesn't work here.
I destroyed
poor Kazooie's beak.
The controls are very similar, but you still have to use a few things differently. Like the double jump is what you wanted to use in that at that situation.
And because they're so similar, it's easy to forget the differences.
Right. Yeah, the fun thing about these controls, for anyone who hasn't played it, is it's called Banjo-Kazooie because they're two characters. Banjo is the bear with the backpack, and Kazooie is the bird, the Breagle, that lives in the backpack for some reason. And all of their moves are different, like, combinations of the two characters rolling around and doing stuff. Yeah, a Breagle. I guess it's some made-up bird in this cartoon land.
Okay. Makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. The fact that they work in tandem together made for a pretty hilarious bit in Banjo-Tooie, the sequel, where there's a character who... trains you and teaches you new moves, and if you switch over to Mumbo Jumbo and try to learn new moves from this guy, he's like, I only train bears and birds, not whatever you are.
Yes,
Mumbo Jumbo
says that.
Jam Jars, thank
you. Yeah.
Jam Jars is in the second one, I believe.
Yes. Correct.
It's Bottles in the first one.
Is it the same guy, just with a different name?
No,
it's the brothers. Okay.
Bottles dies in the first few minutes of Banjo-Tooie.
What? I never played it, to be honest.
That friendly, cute animal?
Yeah.
So, your mentor, the one who teaches you the moves in Banjo-Kazooie, is Bottles the Mole. In Banjo-Tooie, it's his brother, Jam Jars.
Because Bottles is brutally murdered? Like, what?
Yes.
Yes.
Alright, so in Banjo-Tooie... We find out that Gruntilda has a pair of sisters, and they've devised some thing to bring Gruntilda back to life, but it requires the life force of other things. And the first thing they shoot is bottles.
Holy hell.
Yeah. It gets really weird very early on in Banjo-Tooie.
Banjo-Tooie is one of my big blind spots in gaming for having loved the first one so much and having all those weird secrets. I never played Banjo-Tooie.
I actually never beat it, but I've caught glimpses of other people playing it.
Right.
And according to TV Tropes, at least one person cried when Bottles died.
Oh my god.
According to TV Tropes, one person is crying at any given point.
Yeah.
And then they called their friend's partner and said, "What do I do?"
I don't think they really called him up so much as he just kind of showed up and said, "I'm here to teach you stuff now." And he's got the army sergeant uniform going on. And shades instead of glasses.
Oh. So he can see normally.
His molehills heal bunkers instead.
Aha. This is a very in-depth character.
I didn't realize that, like everything else, Banjo-Tooie got darker and grittier, like in the late 92.
The gritty reboot.
Well, I don't think the first game was so innocent either. Because when I played through it with adult eyes,
everything is sentient.
I started to notice that Grunty's castle is a shrine to Banjo, and some of her dialogue is pretty suggestive. She said something about
his shorts. Alone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you think I'm rather soft, I'll be waiting in the loft.
Oh, it's official.
And remember that the whole scheme for Gruntilda in the first game is to drain the youth from Banjo's sister so that she herself can become more beautiful.
It was one of those game over screens where you're going to stop this from happening.
So Teeb's likely favorite character, Tootie, is Banjo's sister, who gets captured by Gruntilda to steal her beauty.
Yes.
Which is weird because she's like 8, so I don't know why they keep talking about how like beautiful she is. It's a little strange.
Mm-hmm. Well,
a little bit weird. But the other
Grunty asks her magic cauldron who is the most beautiful in the land, and it was the cauldron that pointed her to Tootie.
Yeah, we might have to have a talk with this cauldron.
My cauldron points to Tooties too.
Yeah. Whoa.
Your cauldron captures Tooties.
Yeah.
It was Gary Glitter's old cauldron, that's why. And also like past games we've covered, like Crash Bandicoot, do not Google image search any character from this game.
Oh no.
Oh, yeah.
Nope. Because, especially not with safe search off.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's just, I don't know. It's just a bare hole you don't want to go down.
We've had issues in the past.
The best was the Pinecone Pokemon. Now that
the hypersexualized Pinecone.
You know Missing Number from Pokemon?
Oh, yeah.
I've seen Rule 34 of that.
Sexy Missing Number.
Why?
Hang on, let me write this down.
I don't want to live on this planet. What is that?
Missing.
Jesus.
No. Okay. So anyway, the other problematic thing that I came across looking at this with adult eyes was Mumbo Jumbo. Probably not the most sensitive character.
Why would you say that?
Oh, no reason. Maybe not the noise that is made when you pick up his racist collectibles or...
Billy, do you want to take that?
Oh, here's the thing about... Whenever he does his transformation and he goes, "Ooh-duckers," at the end of that, that is a pitch-shifted Grant Kirkhope saying, "Ooh-duckers."
Hang on, I think you cut out there. Say it again.
That is a pitch-shifted Grant Kirkhope saying, "Ooh, me neckers."
What?
Because apparently he sat down on his balls when he was going back into his office at one point.
Yes. Oh, Belvedere.
Oh, he Belvedered himself. I gotta listen back to that one.
And he left that the part of the voice lines right here.
Oh my god.
So that Yeah, that witch doctor ooh yeah ooh ah ooh ah voice that you get when you're talking to Mumbo is just this guy saying, "Oh, me knackers," and it's just all distorted and chopped up.
Yeah.
Oh man, yeah. I gotta hear that again.
Greg Hercog composed all the music for the game, and he also did a lot of the sound effects. There would also be little tricks to save space on the cartridge. So, the ghost guy that we meet in Mad Monster Mansion, the one that's in the big dining room with and sitting on a jiggy, his voice lines are just banjos that are pitch shifted down and slowed.
Oh.
And that saves space on the cartridge.
Right.
By having the same audio file.
Because there is a lot of sound and music in this one. Like, that's something we can talk about now.
I think that's one of the highest selling points of Banjo-Kazooie, honestly.
Yeah, the sound design in general. Like, every little thing has a different noise or musical sting. Like, everything is, like, so well designed. And every character... We've talked about this before as one of our biggest peeves, especially in, like, NES RPGs, is as text goes across the screen, it makes, like, beeps and boops. And, like, sometimes it's, like, super annoying if there's a lot of text. But in this one, they actually do that well, where everyone has kind of like a gibberish little like sound that goes across. And it's not like super annoying beeps, but it's actually like it gives a lot of character to the different characters.
And I forgot which buttons, but you can push different buttons to speed up or slow down the text. And the voice clips will be pitch shifted based on that.
Right.
Oh, I did not find those buttons. I spent like five minutes at the start of this game just looking at dialogue boxes.
Well, the cutscene, the cutscene at the beginning is unskippable. That is a little annoying, but once you get to the text in-game, you can make it speed up a little bit.
You can hold this to speed up.
Yeah.
I was like, this is a platformer. Just let me jump on some things.
Yeah, there is like a webisode long intro to this game. Featuring 2D getting kidnapped and Mole Man trying to help you out and stuff.
Yeah, it wasn't badly done, but it was also like, you know, I'm ready. I think I know what the gist of this one is. Let me get in.
But it also reveals that Kazooie is always living in that backpack, which is it's kind of disturbing.
Yeah.
It just hangs on a peg until...
Apparently she's been in there since she was an egg, or at least that's what I remember reading somewhere.
Okay, let me open up this manual.
You do learn a move in Banjo-Tooie that lets them split up. I remember that part.
Yeah.
Is it called the bathroom break move or something?
I think it's just split up.
It's like Wilson coming from over the fence.
I remember the move being very simply, of course, all of the moves from Jam Jars being very simply named.
Jam Jar.
A lot more straightforward than Bottles.
I gotta get that, Tooie.
Getting back to
it's definitely worth a play.
Sound effect real quick. Towards the end of Banjo-Kazooie, there's this big quiz show where you're on this tile board over a lake of lava. And you have to, you know, get to the prize, which is 2D. And like every tile is a different kind of question. I remember always going out of my way to get all the music note questions because Grunty would ask you a question about what world is this music from or whose voice is this? And I just kind of wanted to show off because I'd memorized them all.
It was ingrained in your brain.
Yeah.
Or she would show a picture of a place that you've been to, but from a really weird camera angle. You have to figure that out.
I remember right, this was not a game where you could just keep a save file right before a cool part, was it? Because if I could, I probably would have just done the quiz show over and over and over because I thought it was so fun.
I don't remember.
Yeah.
I don't know if it overwrites it at the end.
Yeah, your save would be just the one save file.
Right.
Yeah, I think it's like Zelda where you have three different save files so you can have three different games.
But... Oh, yeah, there is. Because in the beginning, like, there's just different places that Banjo is. And it was like, those are three different save files. I remember that.
Yeah, moment. And I of course, chose number three because he's playing a Game Boy. That's right. How you can tell he's a cool bear.
Yeah. Obviously. One of the coolest. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So,
excuse me.
I mean, yeah, that's just like part of that rare design, like just that attention to detail. Like even just selecting a game slot is like this in-depth mm-hmm. scene where Banjo's hanging out, either sleeping or playing a Game Boy.
And concerning the one where he's sleeping, sometimes it would be a random chance, but sometimes the bed would just throw him out the window instead of he would just wake up regularly.
And be a spring, like a spring loaded boing out of the bed.
Boing, right out the window.
Please.
Whoa.
Banjo, you know, speaking of the different screens on the level select, in Conker's Bad Fur Day, which was also from Rare, you can, on one of the save slots, you can see Banjo's head stuffed and mounted on the wall.
Oh. Mm.
So you know that Conker, he's a bad boy.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
For bad behavior.
He's a mean fella.
Yeah. You don't even need to Google image search him. You can just play his game.
Yeah.
Inappropriate things.
No one had to do anything.
That's what I call a platformer.
Oh no.
Now was this the first I don't know, buddy cop platformer? Like there's this one, then there's like
Ice Climbers. Jackson.
Ice Climbers doesn't
arguably,
count.
Donkey Kong on the SNES with the Donkey and Diddy Kong.
Yeah, there was that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, they weren't really attached, though, like these two are.
Good point.
Yeah. I'll think of something.
I don't think we've seen, like, two characters like this.
There was one really obscure example, one other really obscure example I can think of off the top of my head, and that was the video game adaptation of WALL-E, because there were some levels where you could play as Eve carrying WALL-E.
Hmm.
Oh.
Do you ever get to play in one of those hover chairs?
Hover chairs?
From,
Oh, right, the big humans. No,
I'll take that as a no.
No,
yeah,
they were
since
in...
Banjo leading up to Yooka-Laylee, I don't think we've had a whole lot of that.
I read about Yooka-Laylee. Which
Not
seems
great.
Like it's a complete blatant ripoff of Banjo.
Yeah. It's
even
I understand wanting to call back to your roots, but it felt so interesting about it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I just saw screenshots.
Yeah, even down to the name.
Yeah,
I heard that it also kept calling attention to the fact that it was a video game in a not good
way.
Like,
too much breaking the fourth wall.
Yeah, they used the fourth wall as a crutch. What was it that you collected in Yooka-Laylee instead of musical notes?
No. In Yooka-Laylee, it was pages and feathers.
Yeah.
I think you...
Or quills.
You collect pieces of drywall because that fourth wall has been shattered.
That's well, the next game cover for that
one. All over the place.
Well, like, in Banjo-Kazooie, you collect the music notes to get your puzzle pieces and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
In Yooka-Laylee, it said, oh, we collect these because you collect stuff in video games. Isn't that so clever and meta of us? Man, we just blew your mind.
Well, that sounds like a Steve Greenwell favorite, since he loves that Earthbound so much.
On the level of friggin' Bubsy.
No one knows what that is.
Well, no, the best part for me would be if you had to save your game and then load it. To get past obstacles, like you had to save scum.
We can't have a Banjo Kazooie talk without mentioning that one level.
Which one?
Oh, another TV Tropes thing. What's that one level for this
Rusty
game?
Bucket Bay?
What's oh, that? Rusty Bucket Bay.
Oh.
You know.
The one level where everyone dies.
And, see, and I did not get that far this week, so please explain.
Oh.
Okay, so.
Okay, you got it.
Shall I do it? All right. So, in. It's up on, like, the. Of Grunty's lair, but in Rusty Bucket Bay, the Rusty Bucket, which is the ship that she owns, some sort of cargo vessel, and all of its enemies on it, and all of its. And the water is oily. If you're in the water, you take double air damage.
Oh.
So you only have half the time underwater or even in the water. You can't even be on the surface and still be able to breathe. There's also the engine room that nobody likes. The engine room had timed platforms with very strict timings on them. If you miss the timing, you die. and then you have to collect all the notes again. And of course, there are four or five notes in that room that you must have in order to get all the 100 notes.
If you are going to keep playing and you get to Rusty Bucket Bay, do the engine room first, because you will die and you will lose all your musical notes.
Yeah.
Well, so and, get those notes first and then do the rest of the stage.
Basically, right. Yeah.
Because the engine room has these propellers that stop and start periodically, and you have to time your jumps just right. If you miss it, the propeller hits you and you fall into the bottomless pit of death.
Oh, fun.
There's also the Rods of Doom that spin. When they stop spinning, you can be on them. When they start spinning, they throw you.
Yeah. It's very easy to just barely miss your step and slide off of them.
Yeah. This and they the don't kinda technically stop. It's more like the Kentucky Rolling Stop.
This is kind of hot tips you're getting over the phone.
Yeah, here's a fun little activity for our listeners to do. Go look up Rusty Bucket on Urban Dictionary.
Oh, okay.
I was not aware of this.
I wish we could be playing the music from that level in the background while we do this talk, but...
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite level, Billy?
My favorite level... Oh, that's actually a really good question. It's between Freeze Easy Peak and... Oh, what's the second level? Crab, Sand, Beach. I don't remember.
Treasure Trove Cove,
yes.
Boy.
It's between those two, and I'm not really sure why.
Second level.
For me, it's... I would have to say the boss fight against Grunty. That was pretty superb.
Yeah, for being such a silly cartoon game, it has a pretty epic boss fight at the end.
Well, just to touch a little bit on the history of this one, since we mentioned Yooka-Laylee. So a sequel, Banjo-Tooie, came out in 2000. It was also a big deal and sold 3 million copies. The original, I think, sold around 2 million. There's also various handheld releases. And there was one proper sequel, it looks like, after that. Banjo-Kazooie Nuts and Bolts.
That is not a proper sequel.
I hear Bill's anger.
Was that you grinding your teeth, Bill?
I played enough of Nuts and Bolts to tell you it's a sequel.
What is it? A sequel?
It wants to be a sequel.
It has the name on it, but it's not.
It has the name on it, but it's not a. All of the gameplay is different. All of the characters are here, but they're not who they used to be. There's some new guy that nobody cares about. It's all vehicle based now, where you take, it's basically Lego cars. You take different bits and bobs of vehicles and slap them together to accomplish missions. And unless you're doing a mission, all of the zone that is playable is basically empty. There's nothing to do in it. There's nothing to interact with it until you do the mission, and then the mission is so very specific.
It's a sequel to Banjo-Kazooie in the same way that the current season of The Simpsons is part of The Simpsons.
It's the Last Jedi of video games.
Yes.
Oh, doll, that is unfair.
Okay, yeah.
All the names are there, but it's not really
the names are there, but you could have easily renamed this like any other Rareware character and have that be a better game because it's not trying to serve the Banjo-Kazooie label. It's even so bad in Nuts and Bolts where there's a level that's like Banjo World or whatever it was called, and it's basically a monument to all of your sins from the first two games. To the point where in the first game you did all that work to help Clanker out in help me out here, Clanker's Cavern. You helped him out to live a slightly better lifestyle. They've got him trapped and locked up in this new level in Banjo World where he can literally not move.
Aww. Oh.
You do all that work for him then, and now this is where he is. The exact same spot he was when you found him.
This is like the beginning of Aliens 3.
What becomes of Gobi the camel who you keep ground pounding on his back to make him spit out water?
I haven't seen him. I didn't see him when I was playing. Of Gobi's Desert is there as a sort of like knockoff tribute
in that reminder.
World. But yeah, a grim reminder of the part that you didn't like about that level. But Gobi is nowhere to be found, as far as I remember.
Gotcha.
Probably dead.
Bottles comes back sometimes. Klungo is
from
back.
The dead?
Well, he got brought back to life at the end of Banjo-Tooie.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, spoilers.
Spoilers.
Come on.
Yeah, but now
how many,
soul
how many
is
years
cursed.
Later, spoilers. But
nuts
yeah,
and
like,
bolts.
Klungo, remember at the end of Banjo-Tooie, Klungo said he's going to run off and go make his own games. He's done that.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the mini games that you play in Nuts and Bolts.
Whoa.
Oh.
Talk about fourth wall.
Yeah. what's her, like, Mumbo is back, but he's a mechanic now. What's her name?
Humba Wumba.
Humba Wumba's back, but she's a mechanic now. Like, nobody is in the right place. Cootie, by the way, completely missing.
she's still in mechanic trade school.
Yeah, clearly. Gruntilda is a skull at this point that they've thrown into a robot body.
What?
Yeah. Like, nothing makes
sense. Y'all didn't know about this?
No, I never actually played it.
Damn.
I just heard it was terrible.
See, no, everybody heard that it was terrible and nobody played it. I wanted to see how terrible it was. Oh, no. Oh, no. Everybody's here, but it's all wrong.
I guess it's kind of how the recent Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles decided that they were aliens instead of mutants. They just kind of overhauled the entire premise.
Yeah, it's a lot like that.
Did.
Banjo-Kazooie franchise.
Yeah, it must not have been... I looked at the reviews. The reviews were kind of okay, but it must not have sold well because they haven't gone back to the series, which is weird for a series that sold, you know, 5 million copies between the first two installments.
Yeah,
so,
are platformers still very popular overall?
They're popular enough. People are still making them.
There's kind of a revival going on with Hat in Time, Shovel Knight.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's more,
just these indie titles that do platformers.
Yeah, it's more indie
mostly
titles.
Mostly indie.
Yeah.
So, AAA.
People still
not really, except for Nintendo. And
Hat in Time, by the way, really good.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
And I still haven't played Mario Odyssey, but I've heard that it's on the same tier as Mario 3.
Yeah, Mario Odyssey. Really? I did play that not too long ago, and it is pretty good.
That's a AAA platformer, but...
I guess that's really the only one is Nintendo makes them still.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I feel like those 3D open world games are now, all of them just have like RPG elements, or they're straight up kind of first-person shooters in strange ways.
They're less platformer, more just action. You're just rolling around shooting
stuff. Yeah.
Or slash himself with a sword.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we have Breath of the Wild, we have God of War, we have the new Tomb Raiders.
Mm-hmm.
We have these open world survival or RPG or whatever kind of games now that are coming out.
Yeah.
The new God of War game, by the way, looks really good.
It does. Like, I'm not even a huge fan of that series, but that new game, it's tempting. So we need to move along a little bit here. Todd, I understand that you had a segment this week.
Oh, yes, I do have a segment. So I can tell just by listening. You know, full disclosure, everybody, I mentioned before the show, I never played Banjo-Kazooie, and I never played it this week either, because I knew we'd have a couple of experts on to talk about it. And I just wanted to listen and soak it in.
Why, thank you.
But I do have a couple reasons why. Not only is Banjo-Kazooie a great game, it is the most best game of all time. So, the first one comes from somebody named Garth Vidoviak, and it's titled The Best. And he wrote, "This is the best game. There is no equal. The combination of hard to beat and funny makes it an obsession. It is so much fun. My friend said it was stupid. When I made them play, they loved it. Recommend this to anybody. My favorite level is Click Clock Wood. It's the best. My friend Brian likes it too. We both want to get Banjo-Tooie, the second one. The music is cool too. Being able to control the camera makes it cool even more. It is the best role-playing game I've seen. It's a classic. 5 stars.
Oh,
wow.
So, that's role-playing game.
Camera angle was a big deal in, especially in the N64 era.
That's true.
It could make or break a game.
What was?
Camera angle.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh,
yeah.
God, yeah. That is one of the...
That's why Shadows of the Empire is kind of bad, is because the cameras makes it tough to play.
It is one of the only possible issues of this game, because there are some areas where you can't control the camera. It's a little fixed, and there's other times you can't, and it's not really obvious. So sometimes it kind of gets stuck. But I like that they adapted that Ocarina of Time ability to just like snap the camera behind you.
Yeah.
That really helps. That really helps in a world like this.
Especially in Click Clock Wood, where there are a lot of places where the floor is about as thick as Banjo's footprints.
Mm. Oh, it's
this
so
is what you have to walk on.
It's no fun.
Click Clock Wood is the final level of Banjo-Kazooie. It's pretty interestingly done, where it's a giant tree that has a lot of platforms to climb it up, just a little bit around a ground surrounding the tree, but you go to it 4 times, one for every season. There's a
spring,
summer, fall, and winter.
Yeah, that was best. Really cool. It's kind of like that one dungeon in Majora's Mask. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's one of the best level designs, like, ever.
It's pretty sweet.
Todd, right, so, you had another review there?
Yeah, the next one is titled Banjo-Kazooie, and it's written by Granny Samples. And she wrote, "OM gosh, my son, grandson, and great-grandson, all three are totally enjoying this game so much. I'm not any kind of game player, but it makes me feel so good just watching their enjoyment. Thank you for a product that is not full of all that blood and gore that so many of the games have nowadays. 5 stars.
Great grandson.
Somebody is getting a cross stitch of Banjo-Kazooie's logo this Christmas.
Holy hell.
Yeah.
When's that review from?
That was from 2013.
Hope she's still with us.
I remember saying earlier that all of the things are sentient. In Banjo's
true.
World.
Including
this game is it's all about ripping the souls out of all these innocent creatures.
Have you ever seen when you, especially in Treasure Trove Cove, when you smash a crab and you see its limbs and eyeballs go everywhere?
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
That is some huge gore. I did see that.
Frightening.
It's not bloody, but it. The bits go scattering to the four winds.
It's got ludicrous giblets.
They went the extra mile in Conker's Bad Fur Day with the haystacks have eyes, and whenever you defeat a haystack, you know, the hay scatters, but the eyes are still just sitting there blinking, and you can step on and squish them.
And they'll be watching you, by the way.
Yes.
The whole time when they're sitting there.
Well, this is a cartoon, though, so that means it's okay. Like South Park. Like, it's family friendly. Now, just to segue to another feature we do with Todd. Todd, how many DuckTales does Banjo-Kazooie get?
Ooh. Yeah, well, as some people might not be aware, the DuckTales scale factors in two primary factors, those being nostalgia and replayability. Those are the two primary factors.
Primary.
The primary ones. Seeing that I don't really have that much nostalgia, I've known about the game, I've always known it's been a great, I've just never played it. I don't have that much nostalgia for it. Replayability, I've actually never played it. It seems from what I can ascertain, it does have replayability and all the collectibles you can find, and it seems like just a fun game. So this is kind of difficult to rank just because I don't have that much experience with it, but I will be generous today, Huel. I will clock Banjo-Kazooie in at a 0.48 DuckTales.
That's an okay score. The DuckTales scale is on a scale of 1, so you can get between a 0 and a 1.
Yeah.
One DuckTale is the highest amount of DuckTales.
Yes.
Yeah, that nostalgia piece really, really hit hard this time because I don't have any nostalgia.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah, I went with my guess. I don't give official DuckTales scales. I just try to guess what T writes or makes up 2 seconds before he says it. I went with 0.35 because I knew that nostalgia was going to be low.
I was feeling generous.
Yeah, I mean, we got guests, so you don't want to disappoint them. I mean,
yeah, got to play clean. Guess
no,
I'll say
no
it's
better
pretty
way.
High on the nostalgia for me and Billy, right?
Oh yeah,
yeah,
sure.
Yeah. You guys might even have like the Kazooie scale or something like that.
Yeah,
yeah.
The Joe Kaz rating system.
Yeah. The joke cats. Now the other regular rating feature we do is Huel. How many Mario 2s did this manual get?
Realizing how insane this is. This, as we've done, we did not too long ago, I think in January, we did Donkey Kong Country. From Rare,
another Rare treat.
So that I think got, it might have got 4 or 5 Mario 2s. And this game, Banjo-Kazooie, also by Rare, it's no different. It's fantastic. It's one of the best manuals I've ever seen.
Oh, really?
It's got story. It's got the characters with little blurbs. It's got all the moves because there's so many moves you can do. It lists.
No, I gotta ask.
Oh,
does it have sass?
Sass? Can I finish?
Is that the question?
Sass.
Sass.
Let him finish.
I'm on my way. It's got all the moves. It's got all the collectibles because there's so many collectibles. That's something I didn't mention. I'm going to interrupt myself here. This is the beginning of the trend of too many collectibles. This is beginning that trend.
That's fair.
Just too many things to pick up.
Like Banjo-Kazooie, Dexter, Crash Bandicoot.
Yeah, like GTA.
Spyro
like
the Dragon.
Like even that, just too many things.
Jinjos.
You got Jinjos and eggs and
like all those games.
Feathers. Gold Mumbo. Feathers. Mumbo.
Two different feathers. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Honeycomb circles.
Little bags of crack.
Well, yes, little dime bags. So yeah, they list all the power-ups, like the different pads and the molehills and all that stuff.
So it's a 75-page manual, is what you're saying?
It's actually only 30 pages of real content. And it's all in color and all that stuff.
Oh, I had that
manual.
The days when we actually needed manuals for our game.
Yes, this is what I'd like to pay tribute to, is the art of the manual.
And I, And I'm glad that there's somebody else in here that actually reads the freaking manuals.
Thank you.
Same.
Thank you.
I appreciate that very much.
Because I read the manuals, and then I found out one day we just don't get manuals.
It's just not happening anymore. No. This is why I like to bring it up.
So what's your rating for it, Huel?
The only thing missing, Teeb alluded to before I was rudely interrupted by Teeb, lack of sass. A disappointing lack of sass. And
you don't think
it's just
Kazooie's constant name calling constitutes sass?
Kazooie.
That's
not
in the manual.
That's game dialogue.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're talking about just the manual.
Kazooie's not talking in the manual.
Withdrawn.
And it's just a little too many words. Another downside. And I think that just reflects the too many collectibles in the game. So I have to give this 4.5 out of 5 Mario 2s.
Ooh. That is still very, very
respectful. It's still excellent, but I can't give it a perfect score.
Just a little more sass in that manual.
Just missing that one extra ingredient. But yeah, 4.5, a fantastic score for Banjo-Kazooie.
Should have done they did for the Donkey Kong 64 manual, where they basically had Cranky Kong narrating it.
Oh, yeah. Cranky Kong is what brought the Donkey Kong Country manual over the top. I don't remember if I gave it a 5 or not.
Well, you wouldn't want to do research before the show. Like, this is strictly an anti-research show.
Tell you right now, it also got 4.5 Mario 2s, so...
Oh.
Rare is not so rare in making a great manual.
Who'd have thunk it?
Oh. Good night, everybody.
Good times. Well, let's wrap up our review of this one. Michelle, anything else you wanted to say about the old Banjos here?
Knock on the screen. Giggle with glee.
Yeah.
Banjo-Kazooie. That would be a little taste of Brentel Floss's version of the theme song with lyrics.
Oh, my.
Nice.
Where is this? Mental Floss?
Brentel Floss.
Oh. Yeah.
Just look up Banjo-Kazooie with lyrics.
He also did one for the space music from DuckTales.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's one of the greats. And he did I know him from that one and also his Mega Man 2 one.
Yeah, I remember
that. Two of the best theme songs of all time.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, though, on the topic of the music, if you will permit me just a little shameless plug for these guys and their Reinforcement Productions. I just wanted to say that part of the appeal for doing Banjo-Kazooie was because of the music. The Grunty's theme especially was an inspiration for Gravity Gerbil, where they all had...
We would have theme and variations.
Yeah, it was just one musical theme throughout, like Grunty's theme, but it would change based on the level that you were in. And Banjo-Kazooie and Gruntilda's Lair was an inspiration for that.
Yeah, and have any of you all watched Meet the Amazing Tracer?
Ooh, no.
Nope. Ah, okay. It was a pretty popular video on YouTube from Pymations. The guy that did the music, I knew him in college, and he did the music in Gravity Gerbil.
Oh, nice.
Now, is Tracer from Overwatch? Is that what this video is?
Yeah. Yes. Yes,
Meet
that
the amazing Tracer.
Meet the Amazing Tracer.
Hmm. See, the only internet videos I watch are Homestar Runner, so that's I just cut off at 2005.
Oh, goodness.
2005.
Yeah, I'm similar where I don't watch things about video games after 2000, so.
unless it's Fallout related, apparently, then we'll watch it. Billy, was there anything else you wanted to share about the old Banjos?
Not much more beyond that. It was definitely one of the top games of my childhood.
Mm-hmm.
I
know you.
That's all
sweet. You sweet baby. You were 7 when this game came out.
Like 7, 8, 9, something like that.
My word.
Oh my God, so young.
Yeah.
One of our first millennial guests.
It came out in 1998, which is why we're doing the show now. So getting closer to the 20-year anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
But those were like Super Mario 64, Banjo-Kazooie, Mario Kart 64. Like, those were the games of my childhood.
Yeah, nice.
It's fantastic.
No, those are good ones to have.
You just reminded me when you said Mario Kart. Diddy Kong Racing.
Diddy Kong Racing, yes.
Yeah, had Banjo as a playable character. There was also Tip Tup, who was in Banjo-Kazooie, and I think he was supposed to get his own game, but he didn't.
Yeah.
There's reason to believe that Nuts and Bolts would have been a Tip Tup game, but this is what
we
got.
We don't want to spark another tangent about Nuts and Bolts now.
Yeah.
Dial it back a little bit.
Huel, anything else you wanted to share about this one?
Oh, boy. It's great. I remember back in the day, there was a little war between N64 and PlayStation, where all the cool kids were like, PlayStation has the mature, violent games. We're so much better. I'm an adult now. I like things blowing up. N64 has all the kiddie games. It's stupid. And the ones they would always point out is Banjo-Kazooie. And I just feel bad for them because they missed out on one of the best of all time.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't get over their ego. They couldn't get over how they looked to the rest of the world.
Yeah.
And how they looked to the rest of the world was stupid.
Kind of funny. I had a PlayStation and, like, you know, Metal Gear Solid was one of my favorites on that, but so was Spyro the Dragon.
Yeah. Mm. It all that matters, just having fun, man.
Yeah.
What did
you think about Croc? Did you play that for PlayStation?
Croc, Legend of the Gabos.
I played the second one briefly.
Oh, my.
What? There's a second one?
No. Notice the down tone.
Oh my God. I didn't realize that we didn't have one future show. We have two future shows to do.
I'm beginning to feel that Croc Legend of the Gabos is Teeb's Shaq Fu.
Yeah.
It was pretty
Yeah,
awesome.
Teeb's knows everything about the Croc expanded universe. So we're gonna get really deep into it when we cover it. Well, we should move along to the email portion of the show. Todd, did you receive any emails?
No. I did receive an email, but we're going a little bit long. I'll save my time for an ask this week.
Ooh, good call.
Oh, okay. Huel, did you receive any emails?
Well, luckily I did, because Teebs is bitching out here. So I received an email. It says, "Dear YPB, I'm so glad you covered Revolution X last week. Aerosmith is my favorite band, so it was great hearing you guys talk about them. Actually, you barely talked about them and just focused on how bad the game was. That's fine, I guess. It's fine that you basically ignored one of the best American bands of all time and only said how bad the music sounded coming out of the SNES cartridge. Whatever. You guys probably only like stupid bands. What band would you put in a video game anyway?" And that's from smithhead5000@gmail.com.
Well, I know which one Steve would put. The first best band from Boston, Power Man 5000.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, it was Power Man 5000 or New Edition. Those are the best bands from Boston.
Mm, okay. Not Old Edition.
You know what I would do is I think Mortal Kombat needs a new character, and that character is Ben Folds. So
what? Ooh. Dropping pianos on him as a fatality.
Yeah,
absolutely.
He's rocking the suburbs with uppercuts.
What? Roundhouse here. Boy, yeah. what an excellent addition to Mortal Kombat that would be.
Yeah, I was going to make a brick joke, but then I remembered what that song was about. And
no babalities in that game.
Oh, God.
I unfortunately remember babalities.
Oh, yeah. It's devastating.
Yeah. Huel, did you have a pick for band you want to see a game about?
Yeah, I'd probably pick Journey, and it would be a game about them collecting parts for different cars, and they'd build these cars and do different levels in the Journey universe.
I'm not sure if you're aware, but Journey does have its own video game already.
I'd call it Journey Bolts and Nuts. And no, I did not know they had a video game. So yes, at least it would be easy to get their license, probably.
Yes, I believe Journey has like a 1970s arcade game based on them.
Oh, okay.
So,
Revolution J.
We're counting small.
Every band has a pinball.
Well,
every hair metal band has one too. At least,
yeah, Guns N' Roses pinball. I remember that one.
Also, not a video game.
Got him on a technicality. Well, here's my pick, and it's obvious, and there's no question. Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch make my video too.
Oh yeah,
I read that Sean Baby article.
Yeah, it's kind of good. It deserves a sequel.
So
any of our esteemed guests have a choice?
I think Jesse might agree with me on this. If we had the money to license bands for our video game, I think it would be safe to assume that we would have the money to license the rest of what we would need to make Brutal Legend 2.
Oh
yeah.
Very yeah. Nice. So like bring in all the medals again.
Not bad.
Then we get with Brendan Small and have a Deathclaw game.
Yes. Deathclaw would be pretty awesome too.
It feels like they've been in video games before.
My great-grandmother from that review wouldn't care for it, I can tell you that much.
Yeah, that's true.
Granny Simples or whatever?
Granny Samples, yeah.
Samples.
Good Lord.
Sounds like a DJ.
Briefly, the objective of Journey, the video game, is to reunite the members of the band with their instruments and singer Steve Perry with his microphone. Each instrument is located on a different planet.
What?
So, and you have to make it back into the band ship without running into an obstacle. So,
beautiful.
Release 1983.
I'm sure that wasn't reskinned from something completely different.
it was Doki Doki Panic 1.
Doki Doki 3.
Yeah.
Journey's Revenge.
Later became Doki Doki Literature Club.
Actually, no. Those two things are not related.
Very, very different.
I was very confused that Doki Doki Panic and Doki Doki Literature Club were not related.
That's just a sound effect.
We explained that on a previous show.
Oh, okay.
They are very, very different games, apparently.
Well, if we brought it up, we might have to save it for the Sweeties. The Sweeties are our award show at the end of the year, if that's confusing.
Yes.
Since we were talking about band games and Michelle mentioned pinball, I played the Metallica pinball game, and there's a bit of an oversight where the ball could
I'm going to get up on the mic a little bit.
Okay. Yep.
There's a bit of an oversight where the ball could get stuck in the corner, so you're just sitting there and you can't do anything. And I realized, you know, this pinball is a very faithful adaptation of their song One.
Ooh.
That's amazing.
Well, we've never really covered pinball on this show because I feel like that's like pre 2000s.
I've already explained it. It's not a video game.
You just reminded me of another story. When I was circa 12 or 13, I actually tried to get my mother to try Banjo-Kazooie. My mother is a child of the 70s, and her domain was pinball. So anything more advanced than that, she really doesn't do. She managed to fumble her way through, like, the Spiral Mountain, the tutorial level where Bottles is giving you all the different moves.
Right.
She made her way to the first level, Mumbo's Mountain, steps off of the entrance pad, and then there's the over voiceover of Bottle saying, there are three new levels to learn, or three new moves to learn in this level. She puts the controller down, goes, I'm done. I can't do anymore. I can't learn anymore. Two slippers and a ball. That's the extent of what I can do.
Yeah, at least she went from two buttons to one of the simpler console controllers that you could pick up there.
That is a fair point.
Smooth transition.
Yeah, it's always fun when I'm trying to emulate, of course, my legally owned games, and then trying to find any controller that I could possibly use that with. And normally I just give up and you know, just struggle along without using buttons in a N64 game.
I always figured the reason for that was because they were trying to transition from the D-pad to the analog stick. They wanted to give you both options.
Yeah. Kirby 64 didn't use it.
And Sony realized, you know what? You should be able to use both at once.
Well, it was finally PlayStation that figured out, oh, why don't we just put two analog sticks here?
Yeah.
It's ultimately the system that's prevailed here. It would be weird if any of you three had gotten an email to read on the show, since we did not publicize your appearance, but did you?
Nothing related to here, no.
Oh, all right. Well, in that case, we'll move along to the other segment we do regularly, new news. Oh, there we go. And I only have one item. So it is this year's Hall of Fame class for the World Video Game Hall of Fame.
Oh.
There are two games we've covered on here. I'll do the games,
to be honest.
Yep. four nominees this year. Four inductees. John Madden Football, Space War, the first Tomb Raider, which we covered.
Okay.
And then Osama bin Laden's favorite game, Final Fantasy VII.
Oh, yeah. That is fact. That is yes. Undeniable fact.
Well,
it might be his favorite game by default, because that is the one he had.
Yes. What? Yeah, early
Steve, do you want to explain this?
Earlier in the year, we found out the FBI or the CIA or somebody, they did a forensic raid of bin Laden's computer, and on it was Final Fantasy VII. So
no way.
You mean the game that opens with an act of eco-terrorism?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
That is so not the onion. I can't even believe it.
Wasn't there like Looney Tunes cartoons and stuff on there, too?
Looney Tunes cartoons and Elf Bowling, I believe, was on there. So.
Elf Bowling!
What is that?
It sounds like it's a knockoff bowling simulator where the elves are the pins.
Oh.
I may have mentioned that when it was one of those like Shockwave games that was popular around the same time as Homestar Runner. So
I'm kind of glad that we're mostly beyond blaming video games for school shootings and stuff like that, because I'm pretty sure if they found Final Fantasy VII on its computer right after 9/11, that's where all the fingers would be pointing.
There's some of them.
Final Fantasy caused 9/11. You see all this eco-terrorism? Osama bin Laden, an eco-terrorist.
You heard it here first.
I wonder if this has been a contributing factor in the delays of the FF7 remake.
Possibly the delays for Shaq Fu 2 as well.
Yes, we found out. We have followed the progress of Shaq Fu 2 religiously on this show, and it's finally supposed to be released in June of this year. But they said it had to be delayed because of real world political events at one point. So
that's silly.
What real world political events could have delayed Shaq Fu 2?
Well, you know, they had a Black Lives Matter plot line apparently, and then they just had to scrap it or something.
I see.
Todd, I understand you had an ask.
Yeah. So somebody needs our help. So let us ask the Sweet Boys. Send in all your life questions into parentsbasementpodcast@gmail.com, and we will keep it anonymous unless otherwise indicated. This ask is not from anonymous. It's from somebody named Meghan Markle. And her ask is, now I'm glad we have an actual married couple on the show this week to help us answer this question.
Oh boy.
Her ask is, is it a red flag that my fiance doesn't want me on his social media accounts? Dear YPB, strongly considering leaving my fiance due to his secretive behavior. He swears he doesn't hide things from me, and he claims the reason he doesn't want me on his Facebook/Instagram accounts is because he wants his own space since we live together. He also said that I freak out too much of a woman or someone I don't know likes a picture or comments on something when I used to be on his Facebook. I used to get upset because he would add random women that he didn't even know. I can't see any of his pages because they are all private. Red flag? Please help Meghan Markle.
Well, it sounds like normal behavior to me.
I can see both sides here. It's a red. I think it
good
is.
People.
It could be a red flag if he's keeping you off of there, because, you know, I'm pretty open with Michelle on, well, everything, really.
What?
You tell me about every offense that lands you in Facebook jail?
Yeah, I've been banned from multiple websites, and I tell her all of it while giggling.
Yeah, he does.
But the on the other side, he said that you freak out when a girl likes his pictures. That,
well, yeah, that's kind of a bad thing, I guess.
Yeah, I mean,
what reason would he have for talking to any other girls if he already has a fiance?
I have female friends.
It could be friend, or it could be.
There's no
co-worker.
Need. There's no need. He found his best friend. He found his soulmate. She's all he needs.
That's a very possessive way of thinking. I have been alone with female friends, and Michelle has been alone with male friends.
I don't know what kind of millennial weirdos you guys are. But...
Well,
we're weird, but.
What I'm saying is, I don't think a marriage is going to last if both can't trust the other in that sort of situation.
I will speak to the merit of needing your own space, your own outlet. When we moved into this house, we set up the garden shed to be your place for painting, painting your figurines.
Oh, my God. Oh, Dolly Pusher. We got a Dolly Pusher.
What do you paint?
Huh?
What do you play?
Oh, I've got a couple of poisons. X-Wing, Imperial Assault, and I'm trying to get into a Warhammer 40K.
Yes!
Oh, boy.
I think you made a friend.
This came up way too late in the episode.
Oh. Okay, but yeah, he has his own place for... you know, painting. I have my own place, my own craft room for sewing, for where my computer is set up, that kind of thing.
Space is important, but, you know, I have never barred her from the shed, and she has not barred me from her craft room.
Dolly's only.
Yeah, I'm also upset. It took us an hour to find out that we could have a broke back Warhammer thing going on here.
Oh, Lord have mercy.
Just Huel and his new friend painting some dollies together.
We're starting a new pod.
Emperor Senpai, yeah. Noticed you yet?
What's that?
Has Emperor Senpai noticed you yet?
No, I'm Xenos. Don't worry about it.
I'm Chaos Alpha Legion because they're the only true heroes of the setting.
Yeah.
Allegedly.
Exactly.
You're all just talking gibberish.
This is one.
Yeah.
I don't even know what that means.
Well, let me explain.
A little late in the episode.
We're not explaining. just know that this is a fantastic revelation.
Clearly.
Probably something for another time.
Yeah, Billy is a space furry.
I didn't say anything.
I said it for
the record, space wolves, but that's beside the point.
Well, yeah, space wolves furries. Is my other army, so don't worry about it.
Don't call them space elves. Isn't like that. Was that it?
They're Eldar.
Well, yeah, that's
Thank
the
you.
Eldar.
You can see my picture is a Dark Reaper.
Well, Todd, was there anything else you wanted to say before we signed off here?
Yeah, before we sign off, I just wanted to say, I'm sticky, tasty, honey energy.
Huel, was there anything else you wanted to say?
Help Fat Nab Nut the squirrel gather his nuts.
Oh, Lord have mercy, I remember that.
Now, the trio, I'm just going to say that. There's a game that you guys are responsible for. Why don't you play it? I played it. I enjoyed it. I found it delightful.
Oh, okay, great. So, Gravity Gerbil. Check it out on either the Google Play Store or the App Store. It's up for Android and iPhone.
$2.
$1.99. Mm-hmm. And that'll include everything that's up there now. Any future levels will be included in that price.
Yep, updates are free.
Why don't you give us the elevator pitch on this one? What is it?
You're a gerbil in a ball. The ball always moves down on the screen, hence the name Gravity Gerbil. And you just steer the phone, kind of move it like a steering wheel to control which way is down. You navigate the gerbil through through mazes,
puzzles,
you get food pellets.
Yeah, I was trying to think. I've played this game not in video game form, but like it's an actual. Yeah, it's an actual handheld game. Is that what it's called? Labyrinth?
Yeah, the like, wooden one.
Yes,
with maze. Yeah.
Yes, it was pretty heavily inspired by that.
Excellent.
Yeah, except since it's a fancy digital thing on your phone, like obviously you can change it as backgrounds, as music.
Yes.
I was playing the endless levels, and predictably, I was bad at them. Cause I'm bad at most video games now.
What was the poison gas one called?
Oh, a toxic cleanup or something like that?
Yeah. Canisters around to make the gas dissipate.
Yeah.
Yeah, I managed like 48 points on that, so I need to work on it.
Yeah. The idea behind that level is firstly, the gerbil's gravity powers were... He's a lab gerbil, and this drunk scientist imbued him with the power to control gravity. And a lot of the levels are just you running errands for him. So this chemical cleanup level, he wants to get rid of his deadly nerve gas, so he has you... He has you and the canisters out in the city so you can safely disperse it in the atmosphere.
That's how that works, right?
Yeah. Well, that's where you want deadly gas dispersed.
Yes.
More space.
Safely away from the lab.
Just keep the windows open.
Now, since we're always concerned about hot IP on this show, when is the Gravity Gerbil animated show debuting?
maybe on Crackle.
Yes. Are you on Crackle or Netflix or Hulu?
Like Verizon.
I would not say there are currently plans for that.
But, although,
the opportunity arises, I won't say never.
I would take Valve's approach to it, and I will give the green light as soon as somebody shows me a script that doesn't suck, because Valve has been approached by movie studios for a Half-Life movie, and they turned down every single one because the scripts blew.
Oh. By the Valve approach, I thought you meant that you would release like Gravity Gerbil 2 in 2028. The sequel will be leaked on the back of one milk can in Iowa, and then come out a week later or something.
Well, that's how our marketing has been so far.
We've not had much luck getting this out to the people.
Well, listen, after this show, you will probably have literally dozens of downloads. So,
whoa.
Every little bit helps.
Yep.
Yeah.
Preemptive thank one and all.
Yeah. Buy this game. Yeah. It's a life-changing experience. And I'll hit you.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, I think it's time for us to wrap up. So here is a little snifferoo from next week's game.
Kyle delivers the plans to the Rebel Alliance. Soon afterwards, the Death Star is destroyed. But even as the Alliance celebrates this victory, another sinister plot is set in motion that will become an even greater concern for the Rebellion.
The Emperor has approved your test demonstration, General Mock.
Thank you, Lord Vader. What I unveil today will mark a new era for the Empire. We will be able to decimate the Rebels just as we did the Jedi Knights. At last, the Emperor's war will be filled only with the glory and beauty of decisive victory.
A noble cause, General. I hope the demonstration lives up to your claims. Proceed.
With pleasure. Dark Trooper, release.